Live and local, this is a Juno Afternoon on Wednesday, September 6, 2017. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. On today's show, we'll find out about the City Museum's walking tour of Evergreen Cemetery. Brad Parfit from the Juno Community Foundation and Michelle Federico from Gastineau Human Services will be here to highlight residential treatment programs. Sam Bornstein will give us an update on makerspace activities, and Shannon Hasty and Hillary Young will be here to talk about Juno suicide prevention. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. Looking at weather for the rest of today, rain with highs in the mid-60s, and tonight, rain, which may be heavy at times, lows around 50. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Hannah Colton in for Antonia Gonzalez. A former editor of Indian Country Today Media Network says the media organization will be back in some form despite changes in the industry that caused it to go on hiatus this week. Vincent Schilling is a former arts and entertainment editor at the magazine and online publication. He says he wasn't involved in the financial workings of the company, but believes the primary reason the tribal owners halted operations is the dramatic shift in the publishing industry with the rise of the internet and social media.
And I think, you know, not an Indian nation made decisions based upon, you know, their own interworkings for the past 10 years and just said, you know, I think that maybe we'd be more stronger, more apt to focus on other things right now, and Indian Country Today may do well with other hands.
Publisher Ray Hallbritter announced the hiatus on Monday, saying that no new posts, books, or magazines will be released while the company considers a new business model. Indian Country Today Media Network, which has gone through several iterations and names, has been a groundbreaking source of news on issues including the Indian Child Welfare Act, missing and murdered Indigenous women, intergenerational trauma, and human interest stories from Native perspectives. Schilling says he's received an outpouring of support from readers this week, and he's grateful for the opportunities he's had to affect change as a writer and editor over the past decade.
I was the journalist who broke the story about the Native actors walking off the set of the Adam Sandler movie. And I don't care what anyone says. I know that that had a profound effect on the film industry.
Schilling says he's confident the media network is not going away for good.
I really, really do believe strongly that there are quite a few financial backers out there right now that are really interested. I know there are.
IndianCountryMediaNetwork.com will remain accessible through the end of January 2018. A Texas tribe is donating $500,000 to relief efforts in the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey. KJAS.com reports the Alabama Coushatta Tribe of Texas, in cooperation with Nascala Gaming, will give $250,000 to Harris County, Texas, and distribute another $250,000 among 10 other Southeast Texas counties. Tribal Council Chairperson Joanne Batiste said the tribe is pleased to be in a position to give back to the region where it's been located since the 1780s. She says the tribe, along with its partners at Nascala Gaming, will continue to try to raise more funds to help those impacted by Hurricane Harvey. The film Wind River is picking up positive reviews nearly a month after its release. The movie follows the criminal investigation into the death of a Native woman near a reservation in Wyoming, and it invokes the ongoing scrutiny into the handling of missing and murdered women in Canada. U.S. Six Nations actor Graham Greene portrays a local police officer working with the FBI on the investigation. He told Native America Calling this week that his involvement in the film helps his personal mission to call attention to Native issues. He says the film's plot may help introduce audiences to the problem of missing women in Canada and the inability of police to solve cases.
That's just not one case. There's many, many cases of that. The highway of tears, Highway 16 in northern British Columbia, they estimate over 40 women have disappeared. And that's just an estimate. They don't know how many. And they haven't bothered to figure it out. And some of these people, they're too afraid to go and admit that this had happened, admit that their children had disappeared. And to this day, mothers who are, they carry this with them to the grave.
Green is among several Native actors who round out the cast that includes Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen. With National Native News, I'm Hannah Colton.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by BNSF Railway, proud partners of the American Indian Science and Education Society's National Conference, September 21st to 23rd, helping prepare the next generation of STEM leaders. More at bnsf.com/tribalrelations. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. And with me are my first guests today here to talk. They're from the City Museum, and they're here to talk to us about the walking tour of Evergreen Cemetery. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Could you both please introduce yourselves and tell us how you're connected to this event?
I'm Marie Darlin, and I'm one of the volunteers that works up at the City Museum.
And you're also the guide of the tour, is
that
correct?
And I'm the one who's going to be doing the walk.
And my name's Kaya Henriksen, and I'm the public programs coordinator for the museum. So I do all of the organization for our tours and other public programs.
Yes, you're on a Juno Afternoon a lot.
Yes.
Well, it's always nice to see a familiar face. Marie, I'm sure we'll get to know each other in the next 10 minutes or so.
Oh, yes.
Well, for those who don't know, let's start off by talking about where in Juno Evergreen Cemetery is located.
So it's located kind of between 12th Street and Glacier Highway over behind where Harborview Elementary and the high school are on the opposite side of the street.
Yes. If you live downtown, I'm sure you've walked past it at some point. And how old is this cemetery?
It was built in the late 1800s. So there had originally been a smaller cemetery up on Chicken Ridge, which is like 7th Street, top of Gold Belt Avenue. And once that quickly became too small, there was a volunteer effort to build the current cemetery.
And what about the cemetery is so interesting that there's going to be a walking tour through it?
Well, there are quite a few famous Juno folks who are buried there. And it's also kind of remarkable for being a public project in its creation. Marie?
Yes, it was. When they had to move it down there, it actually, it went through several different processes, let's say, before it became actually Evergreen Cemetery, and it's now operated by the city. And so it went through a process of trying to divide up the different sections of the cemetery for one thing, and they finally ended up dividing it between some of the different churches and all with the idea that they would then take care of that part of the cemetery, which didn't really pan out to be that productive, let's say, and so then it eventually became owned by the city.
That's interesting. And is there, you mentioned there's some famous folks buried there. Do you want to give us a clue as to who one of those might be?
Well, we have some of our governors are buried there, and a lot of the people who were really instrumental in starting the city of Juneau.
Sounds like there's a lot of historical significance to the cemetery.
There is.
And when will the walking tour take place?
So it will be this Saturday, September 9th, from 1 to 2:30. And I wanted to also thank Parks and Rec, who's our co-sponsor for the tour, the City Parks and Rec Department. And unfortunately, the tour has sold out, but
yes,
we do have a waiting list.
And that's the good news.
That is the good news. And we are hoping to be able to offer a tour of the cemetery again next summer at least once, and hopefully more than that. So if you're interested in finding out about our future tours, you can go to the City Museum's website, which is just juno.org/library/museum. Or if you like our Facebook page, it's Juno Museum Friends. We post all of our events on there as well.
Okay. So since it's sold out, I don't want you to give too much away, but could you tell us maybe one other thing you might say on the tour for those who won't be able to make it?
Well, other than the fact that we haven't done one now for a few years, we did one a few years ago when we redid the actual brochure for the cemetery and added a few more people to those that are listed in the brochure, which are some that we will be talking about. And so it's just a case of trying to decide what your emphasis is going to be, let's say, for the tour. The last time we did it, we kind of did it by those that we felt were maybe more of the, what would you call it? Those who actually did found the town, let's say, in a way. And this time it's going to be a little different because I'm going to do it from my viewpoint. And because I grew up here, as did my mother, and so my family's been here a long time. And so this time I decided to be different. I think I will just mention some of the people who over the years I have known personally or knew about or went to school with their kids or whatever, so that this time it's going to be more from my viewpoint than what it is, you know, from just a city viewpoint.
Truly a local perspective.
Yes.
That sounds wonderful. Well, congratulations on all these walking tours. They've been very popular. I know that a lot of them have sold out this summer, so that must be nice for the museum.
Yeah, we've been really happy with how well these additional themed walking tours have gone this summer, and they're looking forward to continuing them again next summer. And for people who aren't able to go on the cemetery walk this weekend, we do have a brochure at the museum that's free. That has a map of the cemetery and talks about some of the people who are buried there. And you can also get to it from our website under the research tab. And the city community development department, Parks and Rec, and the museum did a huge mapping project of the cemetery a number of years ago. And all of that information is available online. So if someone wanted to explore the cemetery on their own, there are resources available at the museum or online to help with that, too.
Oh, that's wonderful. You've really made it easy for people.
Well, and that helps, too, with people who come looking for relatives that they figure are buried here. And so it all helps as far as being able to offer that kind of information then to the public if there's somebody they want to try and find.
Of course. And is Evergreen Cemetery, are people still being laid to rest in that cemetery?
It's full.
It's full.
Only from the viewpoint that all the space that's left has been purchased by people in town who then have looked ahead, let's say. And so there are a lot of families out there that are quite a few. In my own family, I have about 20 graves out there that all are a part of my family.
The cemetery is also sold out.
I guess you could say that. They're sold out, too, yes.
Okay, well, fantastic. Well, thanks for all that information. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Kaya Hendrickson and Marie Darlin about the walking tour of Evergreen Cemetery this weekend, which is sold out. But if you want to be on the waiting list, you can contact the City Museum. And, Kaya, what else is the City Museum up to?
So we do have another event that's not sold out and that has unlimited attendance, and that is our next Family Day, which will be the following weekend, Sunday, September 17th from 1 to 3 p.m. And this month, our Family Day is a part of the Juneau Public Library's Big Read Project. So I don't know if you've heard about this yet, but the public library received a grant from the NEA, and it's in partnership with Arts Midwest, and they're doing programs around a book titled Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel. And even though the book is a novel aimed at adults, that part of the book talks about this museum of civilization. So the story takes place in a future time where there's been a big flu that's wiped out a lot of the population. And so many technological systems of communication have completely broken down. And so, 15 years after this event, people can't use their cell phones or laptops or devices of those kind anymore. And so they end up in this museum. So for our family day, I've pulled items from our education collection that reflect a past time in Juneau that today's kids may not recognize. And there will be two parts to the activity. So for one, they can try to guess what the different objects are and their hints and as well as answers. And then for another, there are some really mysterious objects that we want kids or family members to write their own museum label so they can decide based on observing the object what they think it is, when it might have been used, what it might have been used for. And along with that, we are also going to have an interactive exhibit at the Valley Library that's along the same theme. So there will be several objects in the exhibit case out there, and we're inviting people to write their own idea for a museum label for these pieces. And then we're going to go through and select the most creative and best historical label for each piece and put those on display in the new year.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it should be fun.
As always, I wish there was that it was for big kids too, but that's pretty cool.
Well, the exhibit is for all ages, and okay. Really the family day is for all ages too. So
that's good. You know, no, I don't have to feel left out.
Anybody can come.
Good to know. Yes, you were talking about Station 11 on the show yesterday. At least Robert was here talking about it from the library, and I actually, while I was listening to the interview, was able to go on the library's app and check out the ebook. So I've just started reading it as of yesterday.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, and I think the audiobook is still available if anybody out there is still trying to read it.
Yeah, and I know that they have copies available to give away, and I believe that we'll have copies at the museum too if people want to pick up a copy while they're at the family day.
Great. And have you read it?
I have. I read it a couple of years ago. It won a Goodreads Choice Award for Best Science Fiction, so I thought I'd give it a try.
It looks like a good one. It's right up my alley, so I'm looking forward to curling up with it this week as the rain comes back. All right. Well, is there anything else either of you two would like
to
add?
Well, just with the walk, we hope everybody's praying for sun.
Yes, it is a rain or shine event.
It is a rain or shine event.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. But I think everybody's dedicated enough. Well, they won't melt. This is Juneau.
No.
But come prepared for rain. Okay, great. Anything else?
Well, it's only going to be a fairly small group. It's just limited to 15.
Okay.
So we figured that was large enough, you know, without it being so big that nobody could hear anything or, you know, not too many people lead through the cemetery, let's say.
That sounds like a great size.
All right. Thank you for having us on.
Yes. Thank mm-hmm. you very much for
thank
being
you.
Here.
No matter which way you stay, you're out of my mind, out of my mind, out of my mind, out of my mind. I was walking with the ghost, I said, please.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
40 years ago, the first barrel of oil flowed down the Trans-Alaska pipeline.
All of a sudden, in the middle of the night, it goes shh, and I just woke up and I went, oil's in.
Midnight Oil is a new series and podcast from Alaska's Energy Desk about the pipeline that shaped the state. Visit ktoo.org or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
It is about 21 minutes after the hour. You're tuned in to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are here to talk about Recovery House programs. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hi. So there's three of them here. I'm going to have them each introduce themselves and tell the good people who they're with. Let's start with you, Brad.
Hi, I'm Brad Parfit, and I am the supervisor and counselor of Recovery House at Gastineau Human Services.
And I'm Michelle Federico, and I'm the Clinical Programs Director at Gastineau Human Services.
And I'm Amy Skilbred with the Juno Community Foundation, and I'm the Executive Director.
Fantastic. All right, let's start off talking about what are Juno's needs right now in terms of solutions, let's say, to homelessness and addiction for starters, and you can correct me if I'm wrong or add to that or subtract.
Well, it's a pretty big area. I'd say that one of the things that we're here to talk a little bit about is funding that's being provided by the Juno Community Foundation and the City and Borough of Juno for Recovery House program and the intensive outpatient program at Gastineau Human Services. And both of those together are a little over $300,000 a year going into those programs. And programs like these take continuous funding in order to make them happen. And so, you know, thanks to a generous donor and thanks to the City and Borough of Juno, and we're always looking for additional donors that can help with supporting these types of programs that are needed in Juno for substance abuse recovery.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to say more?
Not necessarily all of our clients are there because they're homeless. They're there because they're primarily addicted to drugs and alcohol. And we've been open since January with the Recovery House. It's a new program, and it functions as a somewhat of a step down from an inpatient setting. So folks that go to inpatient treatment and do 30 to 45 days of treatment there, we are available to them to step down and to practice those living skills in a sober environment. And it's not necessarily for folks that are primarily homeless, but folks that are wanting to maintain their recovery and couldn't if they didn't have a sober recovery living environment.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. Yes, mm-hmm. That helps a lot. And Brad, is there anything you want to add?
Nope.
Okay, well, let's on to the next question. So I think you've sort of covered what this program provides, the sober living environment. Mm-hmm. Are there other resources it provides for folks in recovery?
Do you want to talk about that?
Are there other resources other than what we have going on at the house?
Yes, but maybe you could say more about what you do have going on at the house.
So, again, the facility that we have, you know, at the Recovery House is the sober living environment. We do have a treatment aspect to it. As Michelle was alluding to, we are a step-down program. So all of our clients that come in do actually engage in an outpatient treatment. We have another building on our campus that they go and they do their evening classes at.
Outpatient.
Yep. Mm-hmm. They all qualify for the IOP program.
What is that?
Intensive outpatient. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I'm using those acronyms again.
It happens.
We also get involved with the community support meetings that are happening here in Juno. You know, the anonymous programs, we like to get out and have the guys exposed to those. Great Bear Recovery, which has been started up with some of the folks over at NCAD, have invited our guys on numerous different events that we've taken place in. So it's been kind of exciting. You know, we're watching these guys get involved in this growing movement that's happening right now in Juno.
Yes. And the Recovery House program, I think, does it have 10 beds or 12 beds?
We have capacity for 10 people 10 males, adult males. We have between the ages right now of 19 and what was?
We can go up to 99. Yeah, I think at 100 we draw the line.
we've had folks over the age of, I think,
60
was
our oldest.
And we've had two graduates so far since, which is really remarkable to think that people are ready to launch and, you know, in 3 and 4 months. That's maybe 5 in the longest case, but it's been phenomenal. And we have one person who is a volunteer and lives in the house, and this is a person in long-term recovery, and they function as kind of the nighttime support person, a house monitor type thing. And then all day long, the residents of the house engage in therapeutic activities that are similar to what you would experience an inpatient, but they have some increasing freedoms, and we have a phase system. So folks on phase one have a tighter schedule, and then as they move toward phase two, they start to prepare for employment and housing outside of the house. And Brad kind of clinically guides all of that process and helps people make good decisions for themselves.
Yeah, so that I think a fair number of your clients begin at Rainforest Recovery.
Yeah, we've
and that's moved. The Correct. Inpatient yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, facility here in Juneau.
Yeah, and this was really kind of out of the heroin crisis that we had. The community just we kept seeing folks dying and overdosing and not being able to maintain on the outside even after inpatient treatment, and so they asked who had space, and we had space, and we were willing to try Gastineau, Human Services, and just give it a whirl. Right. And it's really been a huge miracle.
Yeah, and it came out of a conversation with providers for substance abuse providers here in town who mm-hmm. provide assistance to people.
Mm-hmm.
And
decision.
There was a meeting of all of those in which, someone said, well, what we're really missing is a place for people to go for sober living.
Mm-hmm.
And without that step, people go right back to the environment that they were in before, and that can be really difficult then to overcome a substance abuse problem, mm-hmm. even if you've gone through a 30-day program. Mm-hmm. And so Gastineau Human Services spoke up and said, hey, we have a building, and with funding from the Rasmussen Foundation to change it up a little bit, and then from the Community Foundation that mm-hmm. first year, really started to get it going. And now, I guess January the doors opened. Mm-hmm. And
January 17th, we started off with one client. And it's been pretty amazing that our clients right now are probably the best salesmen for what we have going on,
mm-hmm.
Which is great because in the early days it was hard to sell somebody into coming into the house, primarily because we asked that they really focus on recovery first, that they need to put aside the pursuit of an employment until they finish their outpatient aftercare. And I think for a lot of them, that was like, ooh, I don't know. I need to get right back into life. But for a lot of our guys that come to the house, this isn't the first time they've tried an inpatient facility. This isn't their first attempt at recovery. And a lot of them, they hear it from these guys that are successful now about how it really hasn't worked out for them in the past. And, hey, look at us. I mean, mm-hmm. we're actually staying sober. And not only that, we're having a good time doing it.
Right. They have a lot of fun. The guys do a lot of fun things. They play frisbee golf. And, they're learning how to have fun sober, which for sober people is very difficult. And, we know Alaska has the highest rate of alcoholism. And a lot of events are alcohol related. So trying to find a way to have recreation and leisure has been a huge emphasis of what we're doing, because that's what's going to keep people connected to each other and to their sober community, is if it's fun and it's meaningful and there's purpose. Otherwise, people relapse because they don't know how to relax and enjoy themselves and cope with life.
Yes. So at the house, they're, most of their day-to-day needs are being met by the program.
Correct.
Food, meals and other necessities, mm-hmm. so that all they have to do. And then do they have to stick to a curfew? You said they have a tight schedule.
Yeah, they have a fairly tight schedule. Once they start working, there's some more flexibility, and usually they don't stick around very long after they start working enough to get back, get a place or mm-hmm. to move on. But most folks are home by 9 o'clock. And
correct. Yeah, Michelle was alluding to the phase system we have. The first phase is they come in, they have to do their intensive outpatient, once they finish up their majority of their groups, then they start looking at what comes next. That's their phase two. And at that point, they really get a chance to, you know, go try the job out and still be able to come back and feedback with us, still go out and make the meetings and, you know, do the activities.
Mm-hmm. Get the balance in their life between,
right,
you know, is a very difficult thing for most people.
Is there space available right now at the house?
There is. Mm-hmm. There is. And to my friend at Rainforest, I got your call today. I'll get back to you. I've been on vacation for a couple of weeks, so we haven't done any new intakes in the last 2 weeks, but we do have two beds open right now.
Great. So what else would you like to say about the program, or where can we find out more information?
The hard part about it is we want folks who are coming out of an inpatient, who have successfully completed an inpatient course of treatment in order to come into the house. So that's where most of our referrals are coming from. It's not a self-referral situation.
Yeah. And do some people come from programs that they're in out of state and come back, or is it now mostly just
we have had no right. out of state referrals.
Just local.
In fact, locally we've had some great referrals. You know, again, we're a step down program, and our goal is to literally grab these people the moment they have, quote unquote, I hate to call it graduation. You don't graduate in recovery. Mm-hmm. Goes on. As soon as they're completed with their inpatient, there's no gap in services from Rainforest exit door to our door. Mm-hmm. They literally get driven over, dropped off, and move in that day. You know, so there's no lapse in their new recovery life.
Yeah. One of the great things about this program is until they opened their doors in January, there was no program like this in Juneau that was providing that sober recovery stage of support. Mm-hmm. And so that's a important piece for people in the recovery mode in Juneau. Mm-hmm. And at this time, you all are only serving men, right?
Right.
Because that's all the facility can do. But, you know, maybe that there's a need for more in Juneau as well.
So I think there is a need.
I agree. Mm-hmm. There's definitely a need. But this sounds like an invaluable resource. And I just want to thank you all for your mm-hmm. playing your role in it.
We want to thank Juneau Community Foundation.
Yeah.
Big thanks to Juneau Community Foundation. They do so much for this place.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks to our donors.
So. Yes. Yes. So is there anything else you'd like to say before we wrap up today?
No, thank you. I really appreciate being
glad
on the air.
Glad we could have this time to talk about our program.
Yes.
Recovery works.
It does. Mm-hmm. And thank you very much for being here today, and thanks for getting the word out.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 6th of September, 2017. It was on this date, 1642, an Act of Parliament closed all the theaters in England as the Puritans took control, recommended that people forego amusement in favor of repentance, reconciliation, and peace with God. The theaters stayed closed for 18 years. Until the restoration of the monarchy in 1660. It's the birthday of Jane Addams, Cedarville, Illinois, 1860, who founded Hull House, the Settlement House, in Chicago. She had gone to London with a friend, and she'd been horrified at the sight of people tossing scraps of food to starving children in the London streets to watch the children fight each other for the food. And she dedicated her life to easing the miseries of poverty in Chicago. Hull House, which held classes in cooking, English language, citizenship, operated a daycare, library, and a kindergarten. It's the birthday of Alice Sebold, Madison, Wisconsin, 1963, author of the novel The Lovely Bones, came out in 2002, about a girl named Susie Salmon, who is abducted and murdered in the early 70s. Susie, who narrates the book from heaven, where she observes her parents and her friends and her murderer. In her heaven, there are schools but no teachers. The textbooks are fashion magazines, and there are peppermint stick ice cream machines everywhere. When the book was published, it sold more than 1 million copies in the first month. It was called the most successful debut since Gone with the Wind. She was an undergraduate at Syracuse University Alice Siebold when she was sexually assaulted in a tunnel on her way home one night. She identified her attacker, testified against him in court. She wrote a memoir about it, which she hoped would help her get over it, but it did not. So she drifted around for years, became addicted to heroin, got a job as a caretaker at an arts colony in the woods in California, lived in a cabin without electricity, and started writing. It took her 10 years to write the book that became The Lovely Bones. She said, "I was motivated to write about violence because I believe it's not unusual. I see it as just a part of life, and I think we get in trouble when we separate people who've experienced it from those who have not." And it was on this day, 1916, the first self-service grocery store, Piggly Wiggly, opened in Memphis, run by a former grocery store clerk named Clarence Saunders. First grocery store to let customers choose their own products. Before Piggly Wiggly, you handed your grocery list to a clerk who walked around the store and selected your items for you and then rang you up. By 1932, there were more than 2,500 Piggly Wiggly stores. Shopping carts were introduced in 1937. Here's a poem for today by Gillian Wegner, Nature Walk. The fern fronds glow with a clean green light, and I lift one and point out the spores curled like sleep on the back, the rows so straight, so even, that I might be convinced of providence at this moment. My daughter is 7. She looks at the spores, at the leaf, at the plant, at this wise, wide forest we're in, and sighs at my pointing out yet another nature fact. But look, I say, each one is a baby, ready to grow. Each one can become its own fern. But she is already moving down the path toward the bridge and whatever's beyond. Nature Walk, poem by Gillian Wegner from The Sweet Haphazard, published by 16 Rivers Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. It's about 22 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm Shelley Delaney, and here with me are local artists Sam Bornstein and Rachel Utzler. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Hey, you're both here to talk about Makerspace, and believe it or not, I had never heard of it until I started doing background research for this interview.
That's why we're here.
Please tell the good people, what is it?
All right, well, Juno Makerspace is a nonprofit here in Juno where we run a shop space called a Makerspace for the community, and we've got tools and equipment for making just about anything. So if you want to sign up as a member, you can come in anytime, and we've got old-fashioned stuff, according to that I think it is anyways, wood shop, metal shop, kilns. And,
you know, real tools, hand tools.
Yeah, that stuff. And then we've got some more recent additions to your standard tool shop, such as a 3D printer and laser cutter and CNC routers.
Well, I have lots of questions about all that good stuff. Those sound like awesome toys. What are some of the things that people make there?
Well, yes, weekly classes. You have open studio every Monday, and there's a lot of different events that go on throughout that. You have a lot. I know there's a lot of people that have been doing a lot of foam building, weapon building.
Yeah, that's one of our events coming up, too. Some people have done some furniture. We've got this great coat rack that's just in the front of the space that someone made it because one day I said, you know, we need a coat rack in here. And someone just made one. So, you know, there's stuff like that happening.
There's not that. We have also the printing press from UAS is out there and different type of things. A couple kilns, ceramic kilns. We have a kick wheel. That's my old one from the high school from the 60s. Yes, it's a big old concrete kick wheel. But yeah, there's a lot of tools. So many tools that we almost don't have enough workspace here and there.
Oh my goodness.
Well, we've got workspace too. So that's another, I think, selling point of this is we've got a couple of tables we always keep clear and a couple of actual clear work benches. And that's something when people come in, they say, oh, thank goodness, because their kitchen table is not quite big enough.
Right. So how long has Makerspace been around?
We've been around a couple years now. We've been slowly growing, acquiring tools and whatnot. So, you know, if had you shown up a couple years ago, we would have had the basics, but not quite everything that we've got today. And in fact, just in the past week, we've gotten some new pieces that I think are like our crown jewels here. But we've got a couple of different CNC routers, which are routers for cutting out wood. So you can program in any shape that you want, and it will then cut it out of. We've got one that'll do a 8-foot by 4-foot plywood sheet, and then another one that does a 3-dimensionally on slightly smaller pieces of wood. And you can make anything just by designing it digitally.
That's incredible.
I know, and I haven't been out there for the last couple of weeks, so I haven't even seen this go up. But it was just being built on, what, Monday?
Right? Yeah, we were building on Monday. We're probably going to be doing some more building this Monday as well. We have our open studio nights, our Monday nights, and that's when we're open to the public. So even if you're not a member, you can come in. We've always had some sort of activity going on. If you don't have your own project you're working on, that we'll put you to work or teach you something new. And last week we were building one of the CNC routers, and we'll probably keep building you use the CNC router to build parts for the CNC router, so that's the next step.
I've got to see that. I just cannot imagine that.
Yeah,
I was picturing more artistic uses, but
So
function is
that
good.
Eventually, can get it that way.
That is so cool. And then I understand you mentioned you have a 3D printer. What do you do with that?
At the moment, I'm helping someone make their Boba Fett costume.
Well, Halloween is right around the corner.
Oh yes.
Kind of the opposite of a CNC router, because it is additive manufacturing rather than subtractive manufacturing, if you want to get technical about this. But it lays down beads of plastic, just same kind of plastic Lego bricks are made out of. But it lays it down. It's kind of like a hot glue gun, if you picture. You have a little nozzle that's moving back and forth, and it'll make any sort of shape that you again program into it on the computer. So this Monday, actually, I'll be giving a class on how to use our 3D printer at the Makerspace. So we're at 1759 Inca Street. It's kind of near Costco. And Monday night, 6 to 8, we're open. And so if you want to learn how to 3D print, come by on the 11th, Monday night, and we will teach you how.
That's so exciting. I actually might have that on my calendar already. I wanted to ask if anybody could come in and learn how to use it, and I'm glad you're offering a class. I would imagine you'd need some sort of instruction before you just sat down with it.
Well, and that's the whole thing with the Makerspace, too. You kind of do need to go through the safety issues of all the tools and things like that when you're actually becoming a member. And then after that first month of vetting, pretty much, then you are a full-blown member, and then you have 24-hour key access.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and we've got people, members who know everything. I don't think anyone knows, one person knows everything. So I know how to run the 3D printer, for example.
I do not know how to run the 3D printer.
And I have no idea how our kilns work.
I can run the kilns.
And Rachel,
you guys are a good team. So apart from like Open Studio and all this cool stuff, what else have you got going on this fall at Makerspace?
Well, go ahead with Sam. He has a whole list of all the events.
Our event list here going down just for Open Studio nights, Monday nights. So 11th, I mentioned, we'll be doing the 3D printing workshop and using our CNC to make a CNC, as one does. And then on the 18th is ceramic pinch pot. So if you want to learn basics about ceramics and working with clay, that is the night for you. And then on the 25th, electronics workshop. That's on me. I have to come up with a project for that.
Plenty of time.
Yeah, I'll figure it. We did one a few weeks ago that was pretty popular where we made little flashlights that we'll probably do something similar. Just learn how to the basics of an electric circuit, turn on a light bulb, all that stuff. Maybe go more complex this time.
Okay.
And all those lists are always on our Juno Makerspace. Our calendar is on junomakerspace.org. I'm also going to be doing an additional class that's not a Monday class, but this is a Glasswork 101 class, which is basically it's a fused glasswork. It's not stained glass. It's actually cutting. I use old recycled window glass. We're going to be cutting that and fusing it together with hooks. And then I will take it home and use my personal glass kiln to fuse it. And then the next week you'll come back and you'll just do the finishing work and put it all together. And that will be on September 13th and September 20th. They're both Wednesdays. And that will be from 6 to 8. The 13th probably will run until 9, just because everyone needs a little extra time that first day.
Your website is really good. It's clear and it's simple and it's up to date. You just read it, but I could find it with a search. Is that the best place to find out more information?
I think so, by far.
And you can sign up for the glass class on the website. I believe we just got that up.
I already did sign up for the class. Perfect.
Right. Yep, and there's actually, I think you were number 2 just an hour ago, and so there was still 8 spots available. This last class that I did was really successful, and that's why we're doing another one this month. It was about a month or 2 ago. I did one where we had 9 participants, and I had a total of 10, and I think that fit the space really, really well. So I don't want to go over that. So there's only probably, 8 more spaces right now. But then I will go ahead. And this could, if this is still really popular, we can just continuing on. And we can keep continuing on with your fusing and maybe even go to.
Everybody in Juno knows how to make a rain chain.
Exactly. That's our goal. I can't wait to have our own
tile rain coasters or anything basic like that.
Cool.
It's a good basic, let's just get used to glass kind of thing.
We're also on Facebook. We have a Facebook group and a Facebook page. We share all this information to both of them. And so you can either join the group, and there's usually a bit more discussion on that, or like our Facebook page just to get the updates and announcements. And then email us at junomakerspace@gmail.com.
Fantastic.
Yes, and I urge everyone just to go and look up a makerspace and just try to figure out like what it is. It's a big movement that's been happening all down in the lower 48 for the last few years, and we are really, really lucky to have one ourselves.
I think
with
so,
as
too.
Much equipment as we have.
I mean,
it's
if
been
you can't
really
tell,
exciting.
I'm super stoked to find out we actually have this resource.
Just wait
till
you see makerspace, then you'll get all kinds of project problems.
That's awesome. Thank you both for being here today. Thank you for doing this and for maintaining Makerspace and for getting the word out, because I want everybody to know now.
Me too. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Whether or not you know it's true, you're who they think they are. This broadcast is sponsored in part by Ron's Apothecary at the Mendenhall Mall. Serving Juneau since 1978, Ron's Apothecary is providing medication information, nutritional supplements, and homeopathic remedies. More information at ronsapothecary.com.
You're tuned into a Juneau Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my final guests are here to talk about the Juneau Suicide Prevention Coalition. Welcome to the show, Shannon and Hillary.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Would you please both introduce yourselves and briefly how you're connected to the coalition?
Sure. I'll start. My name is Hillary Young, and I'm the program coordinator for the Suicide Prevention Coalition. So I help oversee all of the activities that we do.
My name is Shannon Hasty, and I'm a community volunteer.
Go ahead.
I got involved with the coalition about 2 years ago, I think. My friends and family members and I host an annual running event here in Juneau in the fall, and 2 years ago we decided to donate the profits of that run to the Juneau Suicide Prevention Coalition.
And what moved you both to get involved in suicide prevention?
For me, I'm a clinician, and I have worked for Juneau Youth Services, and I was doing a lot of work directly with kids and schools and in some of the residential facilities, and it was kind of all on the back end of after kids had experienced trauma or had difficult times in their life, then, you know, they're going and getting services, and I switched to doing suicide prevention, and now I'm kind of on the front end, and so it's exciting for me to be involved in prevention efforts and helping to ideally prevents kids from needing the type of services that, you know, Youth Services offers to kids. And it's great that they offer them, and they're definitely needed. And I think in the end, if kids can get the services that they offer, then that still is a way to prevent suicide. So it's kind of all along a spectrum, and I'm just kind of moving upstream in that.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, again, going back to 2 years ago when we hosted the run and decided to donate our funds to the Suicide Prevention Coalition, I had worked with these guys, Hillary and a couple of others, over the course of a couple of months. And by the time I was turning in the money, I thought, gosh, I'm sure you guys need help, right? And they said, of course. So I just started attending the monthly meetings. And then I ended up joining the
Public Awareness and Training
Committee, and then from then my participation has just kind of grown.
Any particular reason why the proceeds from the run were donated to Juneau Suicide Prevention over something else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a couple of people that I was close with, either members of their family or themselves, had taken their lives.
I see. So very personal connection. It seems like it's rather emotional work, but I'm sure it can be rewarding as well.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, definitely. And we get to work with great people.
Yes, like yourselves. So what brings you both here today? You have a couple things you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, we wanted to talk about the Year of Kindness. We are part, the Juneau Suicide Prevention Coalition is participating this week for the week of, or Year of Kindness, I guess it's our Week of Kindness. I don't know if that's the term.
Yeah, we're all familiar with the Year of Kindness here. On Juneau Afternoon.
And then next week is National Suicide Prevention Week, and so we are doing the Year of Kindness kind of leading up to the National Suicide Prevention Week and World Suicide Prevention Day, which is on Sunday. And Shannon can share a little bit about what we're doing for the Year of Kindness.
Yeah, so we chose two of the coffee companies in town, and it's the Flying Squirrel and the Grind, and we donated money and some placard cards so we could end up buying coffees, random act of kindness, mm-hmm. Donating coffees. And the baristas are all week passing out free coffees on the Juneau Suicide Prevention Coalition, along with this placard that gives ideas as far as how to pay it forward with kindness. We also have stickers on top of the lid for the coffee cups. And that's been a great success. I just checked in with both of the coffee shops today, and they said that things were going great. There's been a lot of positive feedback. And in fact, at the Flying Squirrel, the feedback was so positive that the baristas said that the owner was coming to, I guess, match whatever monetary donation that we had given, because she thought that was such a great impact and such a great idea.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it's really exciting. Kind of one of the slogans that we have and what the top of the coffee cups say, the little stickers, is turning hope into action. And so when we think about the year of kindness, you know, kind of the goal is to really connect with people that are different than you, whether that's race or gender or ethnicity or whatever it is. And I think the Suicide Prevention Coalition is really interested in participating, because we know that, you know, having a sense of connection and belonging can help protect against suicide. And so that phrasing, turning hope into action, and then having some ideas of what that might look like telling a friend or loved one how much they mean to you, or reconnecting with someone that you lost touch with, or, you know, reminding someone they belong here, maybe just expressing gratitude. Those are all ways to foster that sense of connection and belonging in the community. And then Shannon also painted a bunch of rocks, too, with just different inspirational words. And
yeah, and again, it's based on, you know, belonging, community, you're not alone, be kind, you know, just stuff like that. And I was kind of putting the rocks different places around town.
I think I found one. Well, maybe it's a different organization that paints rocks and leaves them around, but I found one on a trail.
I've been putting them on trails.
Well, I won't say where. You have to go find it for yourself. Well, that's great. Well, thank you for being here. And with a little bit of time left, I was just wondering if you could tell us, like, where we might find more information about this. I know the that Juno Suicide Prevention has a terrific website. Is that the best place to go?
Yeah, so we have a website, JunoSuicidePrevention.org or JunoMentalHealth.org are two websites that we manage if you're looking for information in the community about our efforts. And we also have a Facebook page and Instagram and Twitter, but Facebook is what we're using most frequently, so that would be another great place to get more information about our efforts and then the Kindness Week specifically. Or you could stop by the Grind or Flying Squirrel
and find out all about it there. Yeah. Well, that's terrific. Well, thank you both, Shannon and Hillary, with the Juno Suicide Prevention Coalition, for being here today to talk about their week in the Year of Kindness and National Suicide Prevention Week. Go visit the website. And thanks for listening to Juno Afternoon today. All Things Considered is up next.